Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate that. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. It is Thursday as we record this. That's when we have our guests join us. And live from Los Angeles, kind enough to wake up this morning and join us, is our man Stan Van Gundy. Stan, how are you enjoying now being one of us media guys?
Yeah, it's different, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, let's say, I wonder, like, you seem happier doing this than it looks like you are when you are coaching a basketball team.
Well, I haven't lost a game yet this year. It's just me and Mike Budenholzer right now. So, we're both undefeated.
Yeah, I always wonder how that transition goes, though, because, like, you know, every now and then we have somebody that comes to work at ESPN and then they start doing this and they look around and they're like, man, you know, this really isn't a bad life.
No, it's certainly not. Harder, though, than you think, looking from the outside. You know, what you guys do is really hard. Not what we do. Mm-hmm. I come in and answer questions from you guys, but, what the professionals do, it's actually very, very difficult, and you get an appreciation of it, when you get on this side.
I also wonder, as a coach, that, you know, when you're coaching, you're looking at the next game, you know, you're looking at a certain set of opponents. How much different is it trying to, like, pay attention to more teams at one time?
Yeah, I actually enjoy that. That part of it I really like is sort of watching the whole league and sit there at night and flip around from game to game, find the best game and watch it. You don't get to do that when you're coaching. You're just honed in on the next opponent. So that part of it's been fun.
Well, last night we had a couple, you know, very interesting late games last night. We had the Warriors and the Pelicans, and then we had the Lakers and the Mavericks, and we were just talking before the game where the Lakers won the game, but they were winning by a whole lot more than they were when I went to sleep.
Yeah, no question. The end of that was crazy, and the Mavericks hung in there. You see it all the time in the NBA. I mean, you know, an 8 to 10 point lead with a couple minutes to go is nothing in this league, and particularly now, at the rate people score, things can turn very, very quickly.
Well, what have you thought about the way that Magic and Rob Pelinka put together this roster in Los Angeles?
I thought it was very interesting. I think when they signed LeBron, I think most people, me included, expected them, when they weren't able to attract another star, to go out and get shooters. Instead, they really went out and tried to get guys that they thought could make plays off the dribble. And they've got the 7th best offense in the league right now, despite the suspensions to Ingram and Rondo. So offensively, I think it's working better than what we would have expected.
Yeah, I was about to say, are you surprised that a team in this era could put together an offense like that with not just, it's not simply they don't have a lot of shooting, they got a lot of guys that just can't shoot.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. But it's an interesting thing. So they're 2nd in the league in points in the paint, 63 a game, which is an incredible number, just behind New Orleans. And it's interesting because everybody talks about three-point shooting. There's 6 teams in the league that take right at 40% of their shots from three-point range, and 5 of those teams are in the bottom half of the league in offensive efficiency. And when you turn it the other way, there are 6 teams at the bottom of the league that take 30% of their shots or fewer from three-point range, and 5 of those teams are in the top half of the league in offensive efficiency. So I think we've all gotten caught up in this three-point thing, but if you really look what's going on early in the year, it's the teams that can get into the paint and score that are being effective offensively, and the Lakers are one of those.
Yeah, like, I feel like sometimes people overestimate how easy it is to shoot. And so the Warriors have all these guys that are all-time great shooters, but you're just not going to find dudes off the street that can make threes at that rate.
No, exactly right. And I think what happens is, it happens in every sports league, and it has happened forever, is whoever's at the top, people tend to try to emulate. And so that's what's happened with the Warriors. But my brother says this all the time, and he's absolutely right, is the shots that Steph Curry and Kevin Durant take in particular are bad shots for the vast majority of players in the NBA, and they're not efficient shots. So if you're going to take the same shots that Steph Curry takes, good luck to most of us. You know, those guys are unique. They're elite, and other teams need to get better shots than that. I like what the Lakers are doing, getting a lot of shots at the basket. They're constantly on the attack. Offensively, that team has been good. Now, defensively, that's where the problem is.
Yeah, as I say, their defense, is there any solution or is that just a matter of the personnel?
Well, I think part of it is personnel, and they've decided, you know, to play large parts of the game small. And really small. When you're talking, you're playing Kuzma or LeBron James at center, that's pretty small. So you're going to go and play basically with no basket protection. So when McGee's in the game, they've got at least a little bit of rim protection. When he's not, I mean, people can attack them at will inside. They're doing a lot of switching, which so far anyway has not been very effective for them. It may be down the line as they get together more. But I think this team has played better than I expected to play. I don't think even at 3-5, with the suspensions they had, I don't think there's any disappointment early in the year. In fact, I think what they've done in the first 8 games bodes well. But they're going to have to get their defense together. It's got to be better than it's been so far.
Also, you think they'll be able to sustain the pace of play? I guess that's a question, though, about the whole league now, because I can't remember a time that the NBA was going up and down the floor at this rate.
Right. Look, that's going to be a question not only for the teams in the league, but are the referees going to continue to call the game the same way, which makes teams loosen up defensively? We're going to see. I also think the defenses will adjust. They always do in this league. And so right now, people are not defensively, players and teams are not used to teams running the ball up, particularly off of made baskets, as quickly as they are. That adjustment will come. The pace will definitely slow down some. It's just a matter of how much.
Now, one thing I'm also curious about with the Lakers is, like, what this is for Luke Walton. Is anything, you have coached in situations where you have, like, a big roster turnover like this and a lot of big names come in and you've got to kind of figure this out. But for Luke, what is this? What can you imagine this is like just trying to figure out what this team should be?
Yeah, no, it's really hard when you have that kind of turnover, particularly, I mean, this isn't just turnover. I mean, you went from a young team with no, you know, set star that you were going to build around to having the best player in the world to build around and then going out and get other veterans. So it's an immense turnover and it's a big challenge to him. That's why I'm encouraged by what I've seen in the first 8 games. I think they'll figure it out defensively. I do think as the year goes on, they're probably going to need to either play Zubac some or find a big that they have some confidence in so they don't play small quite as much as they're playing. You know, I think they've been far more effective actually when McGee's been in the game. They need a guy to back him up. And I think you'll see them try to make a move like that.
Well, I think one thing I haven't been able to figure out with them now for, I guess, a couple of years is what is the best way, do you think, to use Brandon Ingram?
Well, I think Luke knows that. I think he's figured that out. And, you know, he's a guy that I think in watching him that you don't have to necessarily run a lot of plays for. As long as the ball is moving, he can play the game within the framework of any offense and take advantages of his opportunities when they come. He is shooting the ball better, which I think is really encouraging. And it's very easy for him to get good quality shots for himself. So I think he can let those other guys handle the ball and he'll find his ways to score.
Now, we also got Lonzo, where he was the guy I was most interested in because I thought that a lot of his skills were similar to what LeBron brought. Not at all that they're the same player, obviously, but they did a lot of the same things. But he seems to do well with LeBron in a way that I didn't expect.
Well, the thing with Lonzo Ball, I think, that people overlook sometimes is he is a very smart basketball player. And smart basketball players tend to be able to figure things out. The other thing that he really does well is he just moves the ball for the sake of moving it. He's not one of those guys who's pounding the ball until he can make the scoring pass and get an assist. He's a good ball movement guy. I think he's really helped them in that regard, in that everybody gets to handle the ball. I would think, I don't know him at all, but I would think he would be a guy that everybody would like to play with.
Yeah, like I felt like when I watched him at UCLA, it was contagious, just how the ball moved. And even when he first came with the Lakers, it was the same thing. And I guess when LeBron got added there, and of course this is easy now because, you know, Lonzo's daddy's not in the country right now. But that was one of the things we wondered, is like how those two were going to find a way to get along. And Lonzo is not a great shooter, but he at least is credible right now.
Right. And again, I'll go back to smart, unselfish players. So you have Rondo, you have LeBron, you have Lonzo Ball, smart, unselfish players who are willing and very good passers. That will usually work pretty well on a team, especially in being able to develop some chemistry. Look, I thought they should have had more shooting, but right now I like the way it looks. The question again is, are they going to guard better than they're guarding right now? Because part of that big part of that comeback last night is those shots down the stretch for Dallas were high quality looks that they were getting quickly. It was pretty easy for them. Right now it's hard to guard in the NBA with the rules and with the pace and everything else, but you got to do it better than the Lakers are doing it.
How frustrated would you be if you were on the sideline with these calls?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gone a little bit too far. Yes, fans like a good pace. There's no question about that. But fans, I think, like toughness. They like a little bit more physicality. They like hard-fought games. I mean, I think it's almost, the way they're calling it now, it's almost an all-star game mentality every night where we're just letting each other run up and down the court. I don't think that's necessarily good for the league, but it usually does slow down as the year goes on. The pace slows down and they loosen up on the calls a little bit. And I think we'll see the same thing as the season goes on.
Yeah, like I understood the changes on things like that coming out of the 90s and the need to create a more free-flowing game. But I feel like right now they gave us something we weren't asking for.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I totally agree with you on that, Bomani. I think everybody was happy with the game, and they made changes that the players don't like, and I'm not sure that the fans were asking for anyway.
Now, we haven't actually gotten to like really talking about LeBron at this point. And I always wonder with people who have had an opportunity to watch this more up close that like from a distance it's easy to just kind of get overpowered and overwhelmed by like the notion of his greatness. But is there something subtle that you've noticed that's changed in his game over the years that kind of stands out when you watch him now?
Well, look, I mean, the guy, he's the best player ever. I think what has happened is he's done a great job taking care of his body, obviously, and he's so smart, and he just keeps getting better and better. So last year, I mean, he shot the ball so well from three. And look, if LeBron is making shots, especially from three-point range, it goes from difficult to impossible. You know, there's just no way to try to take away the three and open up his penetration and everything. And so you have to live with it. Now he hasn't shot the ball well early in the year here from 3-point range. And that's something opposing coaches will be very happy about.
Now, how hard is it though for a guy? I mean, this is the 16th year in the league to consistently bring it defensively because he's not the guy that we saw in Miami in that way.
No, not even close. And I think you've seen it with all the guys as they go on. I mean, it's just hard. You saw it with Michael Jordan and everything else, you know, where in their prime, early in their career, whatever, I mean, they could bring that kind of intensity all the time. I think now they do have to pace themselves. LeBron has to pace himself a little bit and he'll pick his spots. But you know, we've seen it in long playoff runs for 8 straight years. That when games are on the line and it's time where you need to get stops, LeBron can still step up and be one of the best defenders in the league.
And I guess he's really, really going to have to with this squad. I mean, like we could harp on it all we can, but it is stunning to see that offense. And then you're like, yo, man, but they still gave up $130.
Yeah, no, somebody's going to have to. I'll tell you that. I mean, I just don't know how many like plus defenders they have out there. LeBron's their best. Rondo can be good. You know, the rest of them are young and still coming. I like the intensity that Josh Hart plays with. Caldwell Pope can be a good defender, but he's sort of slowly disappearing from their rotation. So I don't know where they're going to be defensively. I'm not even sure I know where the upside is defensively for that team.
Well, another thing that's interesting, too, is when they put together this cast of fascinating characters, we thought that that would be a real storyline of the year. But really, we've just been talking about the basketball thus far. Like, if you were looking at that team and saw that roster lineup, like, how concerned would you be with personality management?
Now, see, I don't see that because, number one, you've got LeBron and he's going to make sure things are done the right way. He's not going to let a lot of craziness go on. I mean, you're not going to usurp LeBron James. So that's not going to happen. Rondo's grown up. I think he's a very solid, always been a mature guy and a winner. He's maybe had some clashes with coaches and things, but I don't think he's ever been a bad guy. And, I'm not sure any of those guys have been bad guys. I mean, we see JaVale McGee, what he did with the Warriors. I mean, there were no problems there. I thought Lance Stevenson had a good year last year in Indiana. So I never really understood that concern. Plus, I think Luke Walton's a great communicator. And so I don't foresee any of those problems.
Yeah, I think Rondo's a fascinating case because I feel like he was a wily old veteran at 23. But nobody listens to 23, right? Like when 23 tries to say those things, it doesn't work. When 33 says it, it's like, Rondo's been around the block.
No, it's a great point. And I think some of the problems that people had with Rondo early in his career is he was ready in his mind to take over the leadership of a team, even a team with Hall of Famers like the Celtics, when he was very young and he knew what he wanted done and he wasn't afraid to speak up. And you're right, when you're in your early part of your career, that doesn't sit well with some of the veterans. Now that he's a veteran, I think people are more willing to take what he says.
All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the Houston Rockets. But first, you know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job. And they actively invite them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. No more sorting through the wrong resume. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the United States. And that comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with more than 1,000 reviews. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, now switching over to this, we're talking about the Houston Rockets. Have you been surprised at their slow start?
Well, not really. I mean, they've missed Harden for the last couple of games. They missed Chris Paul because of the suspension for a couple of games. James Ennis, who was their starting small forward, has been out. So I haven't been really surprised. Look, that offense will be fine. It's 25th in the league now. Eric Gordon has gotten off to a horrific start. He's shooting 30% from the floor and 23% or 24% from three. So they've had a lot of things go wrong, but we know they're going to score points when they get Harden back, and it's Harden and Chris Paul. That's not going to be a problem. Again, a little bit like the Lakers, though. Are they going to be able to defend? I think they surprised all of us last year, having a top 10 defense in the league. But they've now lost some good defenders in Luke Bamute and Trevor Ariza. They haven't really been able to replace that defense. It's going to be tough. Chris Paul's still a very good defender. PJ Tucker's a good defender. Clint Capella's one of the best big defenders, in the league. But the other guys, are below average, to be kind. Harden and Carmelo Anthony, they've got some below average defenders. And right now, when you're not scoring the ball, which means people have better opportunities to run, they're really struggling.
Like, I often have my criticisms of the way that Daryl Morey puts together a team, but I always feel like whenever I look at what they're doing, it's like, okay, I see what the plan was, even if I didn't think that was the plan. They had a surprisingly great defensive team last year, and then like three key cogs, Bezdelic being the other one, were just gone after that, and I wondered how they thought they were going to be able to replace that, or if they thought that they were going to once again have a historically good offense.
Well, I think they did think they would have a historically good offense, and I don't know if it will be quite that good, historically good, but it's going to be one of the better offenses in the league. James Harden alone makes it that, and the team, I think, is constructed pretty well offensively. But defensively, you're right. Those are going to be tough people to replace, and they're going to need you know, those guys who are good defenders, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, those guys have got to bring it every single night, and they still don't have a great depth defensively.
Well, what do you think is the best way for them to use Carmelo at this point in his career? Because I feel like from here, he's still a good player, and if his name wasn't Carmelo Anthony, we'd probably view him a little bit differently, but I don't know what to do with him.
Well, I think that the way Mike D'Antoni started the year with him is probably on paper, just objectively, the best way to use him, which is to bring him off the bench in the second unit. What I thought going into the year, Bomani, was that, you know, it would allow them to play Chris Paul and Harden together more. In other words, you could have them both on the bench together at times because a second unit could ride Carmelo's scoring, which they haven't had the option to do in Houston, so they've had to stagger those two guys. I thought it was the best way to use him. I liked what Mike was doing. But you can't just be objective in these things. You've got to factor in the player's mentality, and I'm not sure that Carmelo Anthony is mentally ready to be a guy who comes off the bench. And look, that's not a negative on him. This guy has been one of the premier scorers in this league for a long time. You're asking him to make a huge adjustment. They may be better off just going back when everybody's healthy, starting Carmelo, and then trying to rotate a little differently so he can carry the second unit. But I just don't think he's at a place to really accept coming off the bench.
Yeah, I wonder what it will take for him to kind of get there, because we saw it happen with Allen Iverson, and that basically wound up being the end of his career because he just couldn't get over the idea of coming off the bench. But, you know, this is the 16th year in the league. Like, that's about the time these sorts of things happen.
Yeah, it is. And some of the guys, like, you know, Dwayne Wade, I think, has handled it exceptionally well. But, again, I think whenever it comes, it only works if the player is at the point that he sees it as a good thing for him. And I don't think Carmelo is there. Now, I could be wrong on that. And I think he's trying to be a team guy, just like he did in Oklahoma City. But I think he's just mentally, he knows what his abilities are to score the ball. And he wants to be in a position to play the way that he has always played. Until he accepts something different, I just don't see him coming off the bench being a great thing for them.
I also found for him in his career, like, the paradigm of basketball changed before him, and the things that we celebrated him for being able to do, which involved a lot of long twos, suddenly we just looked at him and said, hey, don't do that anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's wrong. I think that, you know, the analytics are very, very important. All the coaches study them, and so we know that, you know, free throws, layups, and threes in that area, in that order, are the most efficient shots in the game. But it's still personnel-based, and there are still those guys who can be very, very efficient from the mid-range and in, and I think Carmelo is one of those guys, and I don't think we should take a guy like that, I'm not just speaking of him, but of all guys like that, and take away a strength of their game. Carmelo can be a very effective player in the mid-range.
Yeah, and the part I've always felt he got a little bit of a bad rap about is I've never really found him to be selfish in the ways that people have made out to be. Like, he's there to shoot, certainly, but I feel like that dude played with Iverson and J.R. Smith at the same time.
Yeah, look, I mean, I agree with you on that. You know, you could take most scorers in the league and label them selfish depending on the definition you're using, because Carmelo thinks that he can score on anybody, anytime. And you know what? He's been right about that for most of his career. And so he gets the ball. His mentality is to score the ball. Every team needs guys like that who are scorers. I think he's a scorer. I think that's his mentality. I don't think that makes him a selfish player. I think it makes him a guy who's playing to his strengths.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I haven't noticed so much, is like last year toward the end of the year, it went from the 7 seconds or less kind of D'Antoni offense to just really a grinded out isolation sort of game. Are they doing as much of that this season in what you've seen?
Well, they haven't been as much, but that's because, again, they've had injuries. You know, but yeah, they do not play at a fast pace. Again, Mike's a really, really good coach, and so he's going to adjust to his personnel. Mike's not really an isolation coach, or never was before, but everybody's switching defensively. That provides matchups for Harden and Chris Paul. Big guys have to guard them on the perimeter. He isolates them against those guys and lets them create. You can't argue with the results last year. They were the number one offense in the league. Might not be aesthetically as pleasing as what he did in Phoenix, but it was very, very effective. I don't expect him to change on that.
Now, strategically, how much has all that switching that we see now on defense changed the way NBA coaches have to handle their offenses?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot. And the interesting thing to me is, you know, we've all just accepted that, you know, you have to be able to switch to be a good defensive team. I mean, everybody talks about it. You know, you hear all these teams. We've got guys we can switch 1 through 5. The Lakers talk about that all the time. And so you've got far, far, far more switching than there was 3-4 years ago. And that's the accepted way to play in the NBA. And scores keep going up, 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 up. So I'm just not sure that switching is the way to go for everybody all the time. I think a lot of times it's a shortcut and it's an easy thing to do where it's hard to get over screens and back in front of your man. That's very hard, but it leads to a lot of mismatches, both on the perimeter, inside some, but particularly on the boards. I'm not so sure that teams shouldn't be a little bit more judicious in the amount of switching they do.
And I wonder how hard that has to be, especially for like smaller players who are winding up in these mismatches. And then it's just like, okay, now I'm trying to get around some dude on the block that I can't do anything with.
Yeah, the teams do a great job, like Golden State, of actually bringing another big over, the next biggest guy over to the guy rolling to the rim and running the guard out to the perimeter. So teams have all of those schemes that can help them avoid mismatches inside. The problem is, and what Houston was able to exploit, is you're still stuck with the big who switched on to Chris Paul or James Harden, and they've got to be able to contain that guy off the dribble. Against some teams, it's fine, but when you play the real high-quality guards like James Harden, that you're putting your bigs in a very, very difficult situation.
Yeah, and then we get to the playoffs where we see basically just a whole lot of what we're running this time down the floor is we're going to screen until we get a switch on this dude that we don't think can guard anybody.
That's exactly right. And then you're just lining up the worst defender. I mean, NBA basketball anyway is a game of matchups anyway. And they're using all the switching that's going on in the league to get the matchups that they won, and letting these great players just go to work against, you know, below average defenders or guys who would be good defenders at their own position but are stuck in, you know, very difficult matchups.
I feel so bad for those bad defenders because I can't imagine anything more terrifying than trying to guard one of these dudes in isolation. Like, I think people have such an underestimation of how good NBA basketball players are. Imagine just standing out there like, whoa, nobody's coming. It's just me. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard for the good defenders in this league to get down and contain the ball, particularly the way the referees are calling the game right now, when you can't touch people at all. You know, so even for those guys, it's difficult. But if you're a guy who struggles to move your feet, or you're a big guy that's now asked to guard James Harden or Chris Paul or LeBron James or Steph Curry or one of those guys, I mean, good luck to you.
One of the things I love doing with listeners is have them call in and talk about a time they had to guard some NBA player just on a pickup game or something else. And my brother talks about having to guard Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf in Baton Rouge in 1989. And he said he had a plan, right? All he's going to do is cross over. I got it. And he said there was no going back fast enough to imagine trying to stay in front of him, NBA player. It just wasn't possible. He said he felt like he ran up through his shirt.
You know what? It really is true. These guys are so talented. You know, that when I hear fans talk about, oh, these guys don't try on defense, I'm saying, no. I mean, that may happen at times, but for the most part, no, these guys are trying really, really hard, and these guys are just that good.
Well, that's just about also with the Rockets. What do you think about the idea of them trying to bring Jimmy Butler in?
Well, I think anybody would like to have Jimmy Butler, and he would certainly help them at the defensive end of the floor. I think that would be, you know, the biggest thing he would add to them. Like Carmelo, he would have a big adjustment to make on the offensive end, because Jimmy's a guy who really wants to play in isolation. You know, he'll make plays. He's a good passer, but he wants to play one-on-one and in isolation. They've already got their guards playing that way. I think Mike D'Antoni really wants his wing guys to be guys who shoot the ball when it comes to them, not guys who isolate. And I think he looks at that as, you know, guys who would slow down their offense. So I think it would be a tough adjustment for Jimmy Butler on the offensive end of the floor. But defensively, he would really elevate them, and that's a huge issue for them. It doesn't sound like that's going to be a strong enough package for Jimmy.
Yeah, I also know this. Everybody better be ready to come to work every day. If you got Jimmy Butler and Chris Paul on the same team, everybody better be ready to come to work every day.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And throw in PJ Tucker to that.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, I mean, that's what I think. You know, with that team, you would have great toughness to go along with great offensive ability. It would certainly elevate that, elevate them and put them right back into contention. I just don't see it happening right now anyway with what they're offering.
Yeah, now you know a lot of the principles involved here, obviously, but are you surprised that a deal has not been made given the way the last few weeks of the offseason went?
No, not at all. I think Tom Thibodeau places great value on Jimmy Butler, as he should. I think when a player asks for a trade in season, he tends to take away, or at least in other teams' minds, he takes away the leverage that the Minnesota Timberwolves have. And so I think a lot of teams were trying to undersell the Timberwolves on trades, and I don't think Tom Thibodeau is going to have that. I think he's going to get value for Jimmy Butler, and that's going to take some time, and that's going to probably mean that somebody's going to have to try to give fair value, and I don't think any of the stuff I've read so far, nobody's offered anything close to fair value for Jimmy Butler.
Now, since the season started, at least, it seems that things have been fairly peaceful in Minnesota. Are you surprised by that?
No, I said at the time when it happened is it was a big media event, but there's issues on all 30 teams in this league. Some of, you know, most of them never become public, but there's issues between teammates, players and coaches. There's all those things going on. There are always distractions, trade rumors, whatever. That's part of the business of the NBA that these guys as professionals learn to deal with. And the thing that helps is going out and playing basketball. Jimmy Butler's said it many times. He's absolutely right. When you step on the court, it's a different thing. So I think what you have in Minnesota is probably a lot of people, including Jimmy Butler, who are very uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean that they can't be very effective at the same time.
Yeah, I guess my concern for them really coming off it was Karl Towns. How are you going to handle this? Because he seems, at least from a distance, as though everything's built for him to lead a team, except he's not quite ready to lead a team, and Jimmy Butler is born to lead a team.
Yeah, there's no question. And a lot of people, you know, theorized that the reason that Towns got off to a slow start this season is because of the Jimmy Butler situation, and if that's the case, that's a weakness on Towns' part, and he's going to have to overcome that, because no matter what, once this situation passes, another one is coming. This stuff's coming all the time in the NBA. You got to be very mentally tough to get through it. And if you're a guy that isn't comfortable with Jimmy Butler being there and you don't want him there, well, then you better be ready to step up when he's gone, because that's going to be a big hole in that team.
Well, one thing I always find interesting about sports is we want our best players to have a certain fortitude and to be leader in some ways, but that's not necessarily connected to how talented you are, which seems to be like the underlying story on this one. And that seems to be Jimmy's point. It's like, I am not the most talented, but nobody else works as hard as me.
And you're absolutely right on that, Bomani. I mean, people have different strengths and weaknesses, and just because you're the most talented guy on a team doesn't mean that you have the strengths, the capabilities to be a great leader. I do think some of the things he can do, he can put out more effort consistently on the defensive end of the floor, Karl Anthony Towns, so that you don't have to say a lot, but people have to be able to look at you as the best player and see, not hear, but see your commitment to the team. See your willingness to do the tough things that make a difference between winning and losing. That does have to happen. And I think that's the next step for Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, just overall with Minnesota, the last thing I ask you about that is Thibodeau's defenses have always been so good, but not so much with this team. What's been different?
Yeah, and they haven't been able to get it going defensively since he's been there. So they're 27th right now defensively, which is right where they were last year. I don't think that Towns and Wiggins as the two best players, and that's always who you tend to lay it on, and I think that's fair to be quite honest. I don't think that they are as fully committed to the defensive end of the floor as the guys that Tom coached in Chicago or as an assistant in Boston. And I think that's true of a lot of young players. It takes time for them to fully buy into the importance of defense and to make the commitment to that. But if that franchise is going to move forward, those young guys have to be able to take that step defensively, because even with a guy like Jimmy Butler, this has been a bad defensive team.
Well, as a coach, what is the responsibility to impart that on young players, knowing that you can't make anybody do anything?
Yeah, it's a matter of teaching and showing film and selling. I mean, it is a lot of it. But I can guarantee you that Tom has done all of that. And so at some point, the responsibility lies with the players, and it comes down to, how badly do you want to win? You can't say that you want to win, but you're not going to make the commitment defensively. Those things are mutually exclusive. You've got to do the things it takes to win. And I'm going to put it on Towns and Wiggins. I mean, I've watched them since they've come in the league. They can do a lot more defensively. I don't think Towns is particularly gifted on the defensive end of the floor with his feet, but he can be a lot better than he has been. Wiggins can be a lot better. They have the size and the length to be able to go out and defend, but it's going to have to be a collective commitment. And if Butler's not going to be there, it's going to have to be led by those two guys.
All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the Sixers, but first, guys, you ever had a made-to-measure suit? It is so much better when you have a suit that is tailored to your body. And Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, and the option to personalize the details, like your lapel, the lining, the pockets, buttons, even your own monogram. I got some shirts from Indochino, and they fit fantastically. Now, look, here's how it works. You visit a stylist at our showroom or measure at home and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your design customization, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Now, this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Bomani at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BOMANI for any premium suit for just $359 in free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino is also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with the suit jacket as they do with the sweater. And they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79 U.S. That leads to an interesting transition of sorts to talking about the Sixers, where they got their two young guys who are both great defenders in Simmons and Embiid. Like, that was that they produce on that end in the way that you would want. But now they're bringing Markelle Fultz into the fold, and it doesn't seem to be working very well.
Well, it's tough. That's a tough adjustment. But let's realize what's happened in Philadelphia. So they're 0-4 on the road right now. And they've lost three games to the top three teams in the East on the road: Boston, Milwaukee, and Toronto. The fourth was a loss at Detroit without Ben Simmons, in a very close overtime game where Blake Griffin had 50. So they've had tough games on the road. So I wouldn't read too much into the record right now. I think this is a team where their young guys will defend. I love what Brett Brown had to say in the offseason. Everybody was talking about Ben Simmons making a jump in his shooting, and Brett Brown said, that's not my primary concern. I want him thinking I can be an all-defensive type of guy. I think that's a great mentality for a young player. I think that team's going to be very good on the defensive end. I think their real question is on the offensive end with this new lineup. Now, Šarić has not been able to get off to a good start. He hasn't shot the ball well. They had a great five-man unit, the best five-man unit in terms of units that played a lot last year in the league, and they've changed it. So they put J.J. Redick on the bench. They brought Markelle Fultz into the starting lineup. That's a big adjustment for that team. But Brett Brown is coaching for the long term, and he knows that with Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova gone, that they're going to need Markelle Fultz playing at a high level, whether it's starting or off the bench. He knows he's going to need that come playoff time. He's trying to build his confidence. He's playing him with his better players early in the game. It's been a struggle for him offensively. You know, they're in the bottom 10 in the league right now. But I think Brett's approaching it as, you know, getting ready for April and May.
So how long do you give Fultz to try to work it out and build this confidence before you feel like, okay, maybe we have to try something else? Because that has to be frustrating for the people around him when all the lineups without him are better.
No, that's exactly right. Look, J.J. Redick's still getting plenty of time on the floor. He's being plenty productive. And with Bellinelli not there, you know, you need that off of the bench. And so I think what people, though, tend to overlook with Philly is that team was 25-25 after 50 games last year, so they were not setting the world on fire. The trades and the acquisitions to get Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli were huge for them to get depth. Those are two big losses. Now, who's going to help them like that? The guy to me that Fultz has taken minutes from is TJ McConnell, who's been a very effective player for them over the last couple of years. And I think Brett's just going to have to watch it as time goes on. And Brett's a very smart guy, and he'll know, like, when it's time to start shifting some of those minutes to McConnell. But I think what he's doing in trying to build up Markelle Fultz and trying to make him a better player and a guy that they can use in the playoffs is a great move. Brett's coaching for the long term. And again, that schedule's been really, really difficult early, particularly on the road. They had, you know, Simmons hasn't really been at 100%. So I think they're fine.
Now, how worried would you be about the fact, it's not for me the fact that Simmons isn't a good shooter, it's that he just doesn't shoot at all, at least outside of the paint.
I actually think that's a good thing. Look, here's the thing. I think that a guy being unable to shoot only hurts you if he is shooting. You know, these guys who are shooting jump shots and threes, I'm looking at a whole host of guys in our league right now that are shooting 3, 4, 5 threes a game under 30%. I don't care. You're not going to convince me that that's helping a team. The thing I like about Ben Simmons is he knows his game. He knows what he does well, and he plays to his strengths. He's not trying to convince anybody that he can shoot the ball. When you back up off of him, he brings the ball right to you. Now he's already in the lane. He spins off of you. He can either finish at the rim or he's a great, great passer. I commend Ben Simmons for playing to his strengths. Would I like to see him develop his shooting as his career goes on? Absolutely, because the way he plays is a way that will take a toll on him as time goes on. But I like the idea he's playing to his strengths.
Embiid is such an interesting case for me because I love his game and where it's going. But I watched during the playoffs, especially against Boston, and it was if he couldn't do something right away with the ball, if people could just make him dribble or anything else, it didn't seem like he had a move or some suddenness at that point that would take him to that next level. Is that something you would maybe notice also?
Well, yeah, the thing with Joel Embiid that I think people don't notice enough, he's far better right now at this point in his career on the defensive end of the floor than he is on the offensive end of the floor. Now, he can score the ball. He can step out and shoot it some, though he's one of those guys that I really wonder how effective it is. Right now, he's shooting 29% from three. I think as an opposing coach, every time he shoots the ball from there, rather than being around the basket, you're thinking, we'll take it. I mean, we'll live with that all day long. The thing I think he's really got to clean up on his offensive game is, you know, he's been a high turnover guy. He tries to do too much. As you say, his low post game, his game in the paint and in traffic is not well defined. And so he ends up making a lot of mistakes, but he's a great talent, capable of putting up big numbers, and his greatest strength is on the other end of the floor.
Yeah, no, defensively, he is great. And I don't know how I feel about the fact that he does all this trolling, but it's kind of weird where we saw Dwight Howard, who wanted everybody to like him, and it just didn't work out that way, where Joel Embiid is openly antagonizing people, and we all like him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fun for a lot of people. I'm not a lover of all of that, and I'm certainly not a lover of his antics on the floor, but again, I think you got to make sure you don't get distracted by that. You know, as somebody who's watching and trying to analyze, this guy's a really good player. I think he brings great effort and energy to the game. He seems to me to be a good teammate. So the rest of that stuff is really incidental to what's going on. I'm an old school guy and so a lot of that stuff I don't really like, but I like the way Joel Embiid plays.
Which team are you feeling right now looks like they're the best in the East?
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, Milwaukee has been so far, but Toronto, by the numbers, would show me that they're pretty darn good too. And Boston still got the best defense in the league. Their offense a little bit better than last year. I think all three of those teams are going to fight it out at the top. And then I think Philly should be in that fourth slot. And then from there, I think it's wide open. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch those top three teams in the East and see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm just really curious to see how Boston's going to figure out the best way to allocate those minutes because there's just so many guys.
Yeah, and the other thing is to see where Boston can get to offensively. So we know they're the best defensive team in the league, but they're sitting at 28th offensively right now. Guys have had to shift their roles, which I think is hard. You know, Kyrie coming back. And then Gordon Hayward, who they've never really played with. So everybody's role, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all of those guys' roles have changed. It's going to take some time for them to build the chemistry. Their defense, luckily, is good enough to carry them until they get it together. I thought it was a good sign the other night to see Kyrie Irving aggressive again. I didn't think he had done that over the first six games. That's his game, a little bit like we're just talking about with Carmelo, though they're far different. This guy's a scorer, and you want him to score, and it was good to see him trying to score. We know Tatum will, but right now, offensively, they're near the bottom of the league. It hasn't worked out, but that team will develop chemistry, and I think their defense being so good that I still think they're the best because of their depth. I don't think Toronto and Milwaukee have the depth that Boston does.
Now, are you a guy that has in mind like a set number, like the rotation needs to be 8 guys or 9 guys?
I think it all depends on who you have and how good you are. And so, to me, Boston's got 9 guys that are going to play. Now, Brad is great, I think, about keeping the rest of his guys involved. So you're going to see a Semi Ojeleye occasionally. The other day, Yabusele played against Detroit. I hadn't seen him. He's going to mix Daniel Theis in, who's a very good player. But his primary bench guys are Rozier, Smart, Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines. That unit is, in my mind, the best bench in the league, maybe by a good distance. And their depth, especially over the course of an 82-game season, is going to allow them to overcome injuries. It's going to allow them to play well, in back-to-back situations and things like that. I think it lifts them over the other teams, at least in the regular season.
All right, now that is Stan Van Gundy. Check him out. He hangs out with us on ESPN Now on all our basketball programming. We appreciate you waking up and joining us from Los Angeles, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this twice a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you. Once again, thanks to Stan Van Gundy. Also, thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to ZipRecruiter. Thanks to Indochino. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time Podcast. You get us at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, any of the other places. We'll take it however we can get it, baby. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys next week. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.